keep things moving. We have a highly migratory, this is a scoping, is this a scoping meeting? Or, okay. Take it away, Mike.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Michael Clark. I'm from work for the headquarters office of the Highly Migratory Species Management Division, joined by Diane Steffen, who works for HMS in Gloucester. And thank you very much for allowing us to get on the agenda and give you a little bit more information about an upcoming amendment to our HMS FMP that would look at catch shares for Atlantic sharks. So just to provide a bit of an outline here, some of the you know, touch on some of the background, what led us to this point. Notice of intent was published by HMS last September, which also established a control date of September 16th for possible consideration of permit holders at that time, possible consideration or inclusion in a catch share program for Atlantic sharks. Obviously, we are sort of want to get a little bit more into the weeds, some of the design elements that that should be considered in any catch share program, and talk a little bit more about some of the unique aspects of the shark fishery in that regard, and then sort of where we are in the process and what the next steps are. And again, I'll provide the last slide has the website or a link for our HMS catch share webpage, and so that has a white paper on this. This presentation is essentially a summary of that white paper. So we published an advance notice of proposed rulemaking September 2010, looking at different ways to address some of the issues in the shark fishery, short seasons, regulatory discards, retention limits that aren't economically viable, not species availability or seasons not necessarily always corresponding to when species are most available. And so we looked at some of the quota structure issues, the permit structure, and then also catch shares. At that time, in April of 2011, we received a proposal from some stakeholders in the Gulf of Mexico that were interested in replacing the current management system for sharks in the Gulf with an IFQ program loosely based on the Gulf of Mexico reef fish IFQ program. And that proposal, again, is available on our website on the link that's in the last slide. But and also presented this information to our advisory panel at the April meeting of in the spring of 2011. In general, there was support, and I think for the most part, most of the fishermen that would be affected, a lot of them are sort of reserving judgment, I think, and until they see exactly what sort of catch history we have on file for them and what sort of criteria we'd look at as far as in the initial allocation. And obviously, this is a great opportunity to get information from all the constituents and, of course, the councils as well, because you guys have some experience with these things. So we are considering a catch share program. I said mentioned the control date. That was basically a notice of intent that came out last September. We are asking stakeholders to we are looking at landings history by permit, and so we are asking that constituents don't ask for their landings history as well, just to try and minimize confusion and reduce duplicative efforts. We're holding these scoping workshops. They started last December, and they'll go through March and the comment period on this notice of intent to amend the HMS FMP closes on March 31st. So, again, not to spend too much time on this here, but essentially catch share is just an umbrella term to describe, a fishery management program that provides a portion of the TAC to an individual, cooperative, community, or other eligible entity. A lot of different types, LAP, IFQs, sector allocations, et cetera. And, the share and the allocation, just to provide, I'm sure most of you are aware of this, but the share that one would get is a percentage of the TAC, and then the allocation on an annual basis would vary based on what the quota is, which would change year to year based on updated stock assessments, over harvest, under harvest, etc. So jumping into the design elements for any catch share program, and then trying to provide a direct feedback to some of the unique aspects of Atlantic shark management, looking at which region should be included, Gulf of Mexico versus Atlantic. Like I mentioned, we did get a proposal from stakeholders in the Gulf that are in support of moving forward with the Catch Share program there, but should it just be the Gulf or should we include the Atlantic as well? How should we define the resource unit? Which species, stocks, and aggregation should be included? And should we limit it to just the commercial side, or should we include the recreational fishery as well? Initial allocation, there's a lot of different ways that you can allocate that initial share, and certainly looking forward to more guidance on that versus, you know, landings history versus equal allocation, auction, et cetera. And then eligibility, both not just the initial allocation, but also, you know, obviously wanting to build in, some sort of means for new entrants to come into the fishery at a later date, sort of who should and should not be eligible to participate or have a quota share at the beginning and also moving forward into the future. And then additional considerations, management measures, the duration of the program, transferability, the ability to trade and sell shares, how much should there be, caps to sort of prohibit, one individual from getting too large of a proportion of the share, monitoring and data recovery, logbooks, VMS, that sort of thing, enforcement, and then cost recovery as well. So, again, I just have some working through these design elements. Obviously we have, wanted to put some numbers in front of folks. A lot of them, for the most part, are just examples and based loosely on what the current quotas are and what the current number of permit holders are. And then just some food for thought to try and, sort of guide the discussion. But again, they're, for the most part, they're just examples. And I'll identify when they're not. But starting with the regions, which region should be included? Currently, right now, we only have one TAC that's divided by the region. That's for the large coastal sharks. That's like your black tip, your bull sharks, nurse sharks, scalloped hammerhead, et cetera. So those are divided between the Gulf and the Atlantic. We no longer have a North Atlantic region, so that shows a North Atlantic region, but it's just Atlantic versus Gulf for purposes of that. And then small coastal sharks, the black nose, blue, poor beagle pelagics, there's no regional quotas on those. So I guess just in general, should this just be limit this to the Gulf, where we do have the stakeholder proposal and the support there, or also include other regions as well? The resource unit, which species should we include? The Gulf proposal was pretty focused on just the large coastals. I think that's where the majority of the economic component of the shark fishery is, and on the commercial side has been focused on the large coastals. We have complexes there. We have the non-sandbar large coastals, non-blacknose small coastals, and pelagics. So those are the three complexes. And then we have species-specific quotas based on more recent stock assessments for sandbar, blacknose, poor beagle, and blue sharks. And so, again, just kind of which species should be included in the resource unit. Which gear should be included? This kind of goes hand in hand with the species. For the directed shark fishery, the majority of the efforts on bottom longline or gillnet, depending on the region. The pelagic longliners have to have a shark permit, but typically it's an incidental permit, and they're allowed three sharks per trip, and for the large coastals, and then for small coastals and pelagics, I believe it's 15. So, but those boats typically, they're not putting gas in the boat to go catch sharks. It's usually just like an incidental catch. If they get a few sharks and makos, they'll keep them. Hand gear, rod and reel, hand lines, bandit, they're all authorized gears. But again, most of the effort in the directed shark fishery is bottom long line and gillnet. Who should nymphs include in the catch share program as far as, the directed permit holders, incidental and recreational permit holders? Currently, when we figure out the commercial tack, we usually take dead discards and rec landings off the top, and then what's left over is the tack for the respective species for the commercial side, which is the directed fishermen, incidental, and also state fishermen. We have to account for all landings in state waters as well. So just, sort of an example here of how a tack could be split amongst, sort of the directed side versus the recreational and incidental. And the 80-20, that's just for purposes of, illustration of an example. But just how that would look if, the directed, of the current large coastal shark TAC, if the directed fishery got 836 tons and then recreational and incidental, that would be one way to split it up. Again, there's a lot fewer participants on the directed side than there is on the recreational and incidental side. And just to be clear, the for recreational fishermen to catch sharks, they don't we don't have a shark specific permit. So right now it's an HMS angling permit. So that's for tuna, swordfish, sharks, and billfish. It's one permit. So we don't have anything shark specific right now. As far as the initial allocation, a lot of different ways that that this could be divvied up, either in equal allocation based on catch history, if so, which years, level of participation. So it's sort of linked with catch history, but can include some other components and then a combination thereof. So the equal allocation, this would be, you know, obviously just taken, you know, whoever was to be included, if it was just commercial or commercial and recreational, all the eligible participants, and just give everybody an equal share. Obviously, this gives everybody something, and it's, you know, sort of provides equity. But at the same time, I think for the people that are, you know, interested in sort of maintaining their relatively active level of participation, you know, in directing on sharks, I think, you know, it would be that much more restrictive. It would be that much more difficult to be able to have a shark fishery with that low of a level of initial quota. And, yeah, and it also kind of the people that are the active participants are obviously going to take a pretty big hit compared to what they had been landing. And whether or not that would even be economically viable is questionable. So if we just did, again, looking at the, you know, splitting it up, 80-20, this is, you know, gives a little bit more of an idea. So if you looked at, you know, if 80% went to the commercial side, divide by 250 directed permit holders, which is, you know, which is pretty close. I think there's about 230 right now. It'd be like 3.3 metric tons apiece. And then, you know, on the recreational incidental side, at 0.07. I mean, it's, you know, obviously, not much as far as an initial allocation for either side. I think in this case, under that scenario, both sides would be sort of disadvantaged compared to what they're doing now. Again, as opposed to the equal allocation, catch history, I think is something that, you know, most other catch shares that have been implemented have looked at, where you basically just take an individual shares based on their landings history and within a set of qualifying years. And I guess that's the two things that we're looking for comments on, is what the range should be. We can go back to about 2002. Limited access went into place in 1999, and, you know, after some litigation and when the dust settled on that, is 2002 is basically the first year that we'd have on that. And then, of course, we can expand that out to, depending on when this went into place, you know, obviously we could include, you know, 2011 landings will be available this year, and so those that could be included as well. So we could do the whole range. We could do sort of like the best four out of those years, and four again is just an example, or sort of your level of participation, the number of years you've been in the fishery, number of trips per year, that sort of thing, or, you know, again, a combination of the three. So just to and these aren't examples; these are real numbers. Just kind of the figure on the left there gives you you know, just an idea of sort of the total landings and number of active vessels, active being landed one shark. So these are, you know, it's more of a inclusive estimate. I mean, there's probably about 50 boats that are actually that I would guess from Maine to Texas that are targeting sharks and making like a couple of trip limits a year sort of thing. But this is just has landed one, at least one shark in the given years there. You see, after 2006, they went over their quota by a lot, and so that's why the landings were so much lower in 2007, 8, and 9. And then 2008 was when we went forward with Amendment 2, which took sandbar sharks out of the management unit and set them aside for a cooperative research fishery only. So only, you know, 5 to 10 boats per year allowed to land sandbar sharks. And also the retention limit went from a 4,000-pound trip limit to 33 sharks. So it was about a 30% reduction there. So that's why, that, you know, obviously the landings and number of active vessels has decreased since then. So again, just a little more on which qualifying years could be used. You know, the whole, you know, we can go back as far as 2002, and then again, depending on when we implement, could, you know, include 2011, possibly 2012, if it's that much further down the road when this gets implemented. If we just took 2006 to 2010, this gives a little bit more weight to the folks that are still active and have been able to adjust to the reduced retention limits and the fact that that sandbar are no longer included outside of the research fishery. The best 4 years would sort of balance those two approaches, you know, sort of providing some more of an acknowledgement to the historical fishermen in addition to the newer, more active vessels. Or we could, you know, sort of just look at the level of participation, the number of years that you've been actively fishing, number of trips per year, that sort of thing. So another thing to think about when you're doing these initial allocations is, you know, do the landings stay with the permit and the vessel owner? In other words, the landings are not transferred when people upgrade or when they sell or buy a permit, or do they stay with the vessel, meaning that when you buy a permit or transfer a permit from somebody else, you're taking on their landings history. So example of, you know, the first where landings are not transferred. Fisherman A has the same permit for 7 years, average of 100, you know, the landings that we use for allocation, you know, his average landings are 120 tons. We use 120 tons. Fisherman B bought a new permit, sold their original permit, and their original permit would stick with them, so they'd pick the higher of the two, so they'd have the landings history again, would not be transferred. And then the new entrants, and this is the difficult one, so somebody that's just getting into the fishery, they're starting out with zero because they don't have the landings history themselves. On the other side, you know, if it stays with the vessel, then, you know, when you buy or sell a vessel, then your landings go with it. And so, again, if you have the same vessel, you know, it's the same scenario. You still get your 120 tons. And again, these are all just for, you know, just examples. If you upgrade your vessel and your old vessel had 84 and your new one has 35, well, the landings transfer. So you basically have the landings that correspond to the vessel that you currently have a permit for. And then again, if you buy a new vessel and that history had 120 tons associated with it, you're buying that landings history. So it's just two different approaches to think about. Again, level of participation, you know, the initial share allocation could be based on level of participation. You know, sort of there's some natural breaks when you look at the data from 2003 to 2009, sort of the high, medium, and low levels of activity based on landings, trips, and number of years fishing. So the and these are actual numbers as well. So, you know, the low camp, typically those boats have been in the fishery less than 3 years, landings per year less than 4 tons, and fewer than 9 trips a year. Medium, 4 years in the fishery, 4 to 10 tons, 9 to 13 trips a year, and then the high is the high liners, anything greater than 5 years in the fishery, between 2003 and 2009. Greater than 10 tons landed per year, obviously varies by the vessel, and more than 14 trips a year, 14 or more trips per year. So again, using this as a basis, you know, just based on the level of participation, you know, you got 62 vessels that are in sort of this high liner category. You know, if just, and again, the 70% is just a number for purposes of illustration. If they got 70% of the quota, you know, that'd be 7.7 tons per vessel. That's, you know, sort of in the highliner camp. For medium, give them 20%, that'd be 2.2 per vessel, and then the low would be 0.6 tons per vessel if they got 10% of the share. You could also stack these, combine the catch history with an equal allocation, so everybody gets sort of a base amount, use 30% of the quota for that, and then base 70% of the initial allocation on their catch history or participation. And looks a little bit different in this case. The highliners, the folks that are in the higher camp, their allocation goes down, the folks in the medium goes up, and the low goes up slightly as well. Other things to think about, you know, the duration, you know, the Magnuson, I believe, states that you know, any program can't go on for more than 10 years without a review or a reauthorization. So that is sort of a bookend that we have to think about with that. But yeah, I'd probably want to, you know, it'd probably be something we'd want to have a built-in review much sooner than that anyway. Transferability, how and under what circumstances would folks be able to trade or sell shares, and who's eligible to have, you know, to get into the fishery? Again, we want to try and build some flexibility for new entrants. Monitoring and data recovery, I think, you know, lots of examples within the agency of how monitoring and data have changed under catch share programs. But again, wanting to have sort of a more refined sense of what people are catching and sort of in more of a real time, so that they can obviously know exactly what they have left and sort of plan out their fishing trips for the remainder of the season. Enforcement, hail in, hail out. Obviously, you need VMS or some other mechanism for that. Restrict the offloading times and only allow approved landing sites. That's what other fisheries have done. And then the cost recovery, if we went with a LAP, obviously that can't exceed 3%. So yeah, this is scoping obviously till March 31st. Hope to come up with a pre-draft middle of this year, and then proposed and final rule we do our proposed rule and draft EIS at the same time, and then the final rule would come out with the FEIS again, sort of 2013-2014 time frame. But again, this is all to be determined. And so just to kind of, again, to come back to some of these questions that we're really looking for input on is, what region should it apply to if we go forward with a catch share? Should it just be the Gulf and Atlantic, just Atlantic? What species should be included? Who should be eligible to receive an initial allocation and subsequent transfer? How to account for a new entrance? What qualifying year should we use? Again, I sort of mentioned that split, the pre-2006 fishery versus the post-2006 fishery in terms of just balancing that initial allocation, who's more likely to remain active in the fishery, and, sort of how to deal with, potentially some of the latent effort issues or people that giving them some compensation even if they don't have any intention of returning to the fishery. And what allocation formula should we use? Equal allocation, catch history, level of participation, or a combination? And then just the other things I mentioned at the end there as far as duration, transferability, monitoring, enforcement, cost recovery. Should we do a referendum? That sort of thing. So here's the workshops, most of which have passed. We're also consulting with five councils. And, the last one I think is coming up in Manio a week after next. And again, here's the link to the catch share website, and certainly we look forward to any questions or comments that I can address here, but if you have follow up questions, please shoot us an email or drop us a line. Thank you, Mike.
Paul, and then I've got a question and comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike, it says an Atlantic shark, but you're really talking about Gulf of Mexico and Atlantic, so it's quite a range. Is that correct? Okay. So my question is, or concern is, that just dealing with what we call regional fisheries, New England, and trying to implement catch shares is just a tremendous workload. I don't know how you're going to reach consensus from Texas to Maine on qualification periods and everything else. So my comment would be, as the councils are moving towards ecosystem management, moving by space, that eventually someday we're going to be concerned about Gulf of Maine, Georges Bank, and every fishery in that space. So to get that connection now, it seems to me that if there was an allocation of shark to the Northeast region, then this region could decide how it wants to, the fishermen in this region could decide its design criteria for each catch share program if they wanted one. So I think your scale is too big. If you look at the nexus from going from fishery management to spatial management with ecosystem management, I think you got to start with a quota for this region and then work at a different scale along, 3 to 5 councils would be better.
Paul partially touched on what I was going to ask, but if this impacts fishermen in New England, I'm just wondering, is there a requirement for a referendum on that, or is it because it's not managed by the New England Council that there is not a... that's right, it's under... Okay.
My understanding is that the secretarial FMPs are exempt from the need to have a referendum. The question is whether or not we should, anyway.
Just a point of curiosity. You had mentioned that that currently recreational participants fish under the HMS permit, and is there any intent to separate that separate sharks out, or just is the intent to leave it the way it is?
I think we definitely want to get comment on it, but I think the intent would be to leave it out and sort of focus more on the commercial side. That's, you know, that's what we've heard for the most part during the scoping as well, because again, regionally there's such a discrepancy between, you know, the target species and then the reporting requirements that would need to be stacked on to, you know, any sort of, and it's an open access fishery, frankly, so to the extent that, you know, that would be a lot more difficult from a management perspective.
And in the form of a comment on allocation, you're probably aware that's going to be the hardest part of your decision. And if you get that right, a lot of the rest of it falls in place a whole lot better. Well,
half the people will agree with you.
You know, from my own standpoint in this fishery, it would seem like catch history would be a fair way to do it. It seems like when you would make whatever commercial recreational split, there would be that part would have to be based on history, particularly for the recreational side. So it just seems like you should do it right across the board. But anyone else? Paul.
Mike, that taking off the top thing could be problematic. We talk about taking things off the top if they're below a certain criteria, like 5% of the total catch, then it comes off the top. But as that grows, you know, that recreational commercial split, then you might want to have a threshold where it does have to be allocated if it's above a certain threshold.
Anyone else in the count? Tom.
Just one quick comment, and it's something that we've run into as a council for the monkfish plan, I think at the September meeting, and that is I saw the note that everyone is asked not to request their history at this point. It's very difficult to have conversations about moving forward with any of these things when we don't have history. That's everyone's first question, and it absolutely bogs the process down and the discussion down when people feel they don't have access or transparency to that information. So just a broad comment, because I think it is resource intensive, but I don't really see any way around that.
Anyone else on the council? I'll go to the audience. Any comments? Back to the council. Thank you, Mike. I think that gets us to the other business. Is there any other business to come before the council? Council. 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 Council.